are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen. I'm a senior economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by Stephen Halmerich, our chief economist and head of research. And Stephen, good to have you on today.
Thanks, Belinda. Good to talk to you again.
So today we're actually going to touch on one topic in particular that you wrote about in your most recent Vantage Point publication that was published on the 25th of August, and that is modern monetary theory. But before we do that, I thought it would just be great to get a quick review of the economic outlook. We're a bit less than 1 week out from the second quarter GDP numbers in Australia, which will obviously show a very deep contraction. But just how are you thinking about the economy at the moment?
Yeah, thanks, Belinda. Well, yes, those June quarter GDP numbers are expected to show a really deep contraction on the quarter. We're currently thinking around about 6% decline on the quarter. So, you know, that's actually quite massive. You know, normally the GDP numbers move around somewhere between 0 and maybe 1%. So a 6% decline is quite significant. But perhaps just as importantly, due to the stage four lockdowns in Melbourne, Greater Melbourne, we now think that the third quarter, the September quarter, will be a small negative GDP print as well. So that'll be three quarters in a row of negative GDP, which is very unusual. So for all of calendar 2020, we expect the economy to contract by just over 4%, 4.2%. That's a very deep downturn. And maybe just as importantly, for 2021, we expect a pretty modest recovery, up just 1.8%. And it's probably worth pointing out that the Reserve Bank's forecasts are pretty similar to that. They're minus 4 for this year, plus 2 for next year. So with a bit of rounding, very similar forecast to our own.
That obviously brings a lot of debate about that slow pace of recovery. And I know when you hear from the policymakers, both at the Reserve Bank and Treasury and also the politicians, it is very much about a slow pace of recovery, a bumpy recovery, uncertainty, and that really calls into question the amount of policy support the Australian economy will need going forward, and in particular, how the role of monetary policy versus fiscal policy will start to differ going forward. So we've heard a lot from the Reserve Bank of Australia over the month of August. They're currently doing a lot to support the economy. In your report, you described the RBA's policy stance as conventional, unconventional, which I really liked. And I'll let you describe that in a minute. But what else could the RBA do if more support was needed for the Australian economy?
Well, that's right. So I've tried to classify monetary policy. I guess I made up a couple of new terms, which was conventional, unconventional, and then unconventional, unconventional. Yeah. It's a bit of a mouthful, but
makes sense, though, when you hear you describe it, though, which I think is good.
Right. So the RBA is doing now what we might call conventional, unconventional. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But the unconventional, unconventional is really two things, and that's negative interest rates and or what we call monetary financing, helicopter money, or modern monetary theory. So negative interest rates, we think, are extremely unlikely in Australia. The Reserve Bank Governor has made it very clear that he thinks the costs of negative interest rates far outweigh the benefits. We would agree with that. Other members of the research team have written on that subject as well. And so we think a move to negative interest rates is very unlikely. So that's not in our forecast. Monetary financing or modern monetary theory refers to central banks creating new money, new reserves, and essentially just giving that money to the government, lending it to them at zero interest rates, or just creating the money and transferring it to the government. Now, the way to think about that is currently government spending is bounded by two things. It's bounded by how much they're willing to tax their citizens and corporates, and how much they're willing or able to borrow in financial markets, you know, paying the market interest rate. Modern monetary theory says that government spending is not bounded by taxability, tax willingness, or borrowing, but it's actually only bounded by how much inflation are you willing to create. And spending can just be facilitated by the central bank creating money, giving it to the government can go and spend it, up until they create enough inflation that they think that that's the limit. So it's a really significant change in mindset for governments and for central banks and for, you know, economic theory. So far, no major economies, no major countries have taken up the modern monetary theory, but one central bank has, and that's actually the Central Bank of Indonesia. So this year, the Indonesian budget deficit is increasing dramatically, like every other government budget deficit is around the world. And the government and the Central Bank of Indonesia have come to an agreement where the Central Bank of Indonesia will just create part of that extra funding required for the budget deficit and essentially just provide that money to the government, quote-unquote, free. So maybe I might pause there because that's a lot to digest.
It is. And I guess, you know, some of the long-standing proponents of modern monetary theory, you know, several high-profile economists have been starting to argue about using modern monetary theory. I guess that's because, you know, government debt levels around the world are rising, interest rates are at effective lower bounds globally, inflation's very low. What are some of the other arguments, or why do they think that it would actually be beneficial to go down that path, mind you, of the costs as well? And what's kind of the RBA saying about this, more importantly, with us focused on Australia here?
We think, well, essentially, you may only want to use modern monetary theory if you think that traditional or conventional monetary policy has come to the end. You know, you can't do any more. And that includes not only moving interest rates up and down, but things like quantitative easing, which is buying government bonds in the secondary market. So the difference between quantitative easing and modern monetary theory is, in quantitative easing, central banks are buying the bonds in the secondary market at the market rate. In modern monetary theory or monetary financing, they're just creating the money and giving it to the government. So one of the really big issues around modern monetary theory is that it breaks separation between monetary policy and fiscal policy. So central banks essentially will no longer be independent from the government. And if you go down this path, you could imagine that governments might just say to the central banks, I want to spend money on a particular project. Please go and create that new money and I'll go and spend it. And at the moment in Australia and most other central banks around the world, monetary policy is run by an independent central bank, independent board, and they make the decisions on how to put interest rates or when to put interest rates up and down and by how much. Monetary financing breaks that independence and just essentially means the central bank is part of government spending decisions. Yeah, independent central banks have served us very well. Breaking that link is a very big deal.
It is, and I certainly think on the inflation side is there would be more concerns about what could happen. Turning our attention to the other unconventional policy options, and that's negative interest rates. So this has also been brought up by the Reserve Bank as something they're not looking at, but other central banks are, namely the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. What's the RBA saying on reasons for and against negative interest rates in Australia?
Yeah, so the Reserve Bank governor here has been very clear, saying that, as I mentioned, that the costs far outweigh the benefits. But I find it really interesting that if you were to name two central banks in the world that are probably the most similar and think along the same lines, you'd say the Reserve Bank of Australia and the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Yet those institutions have reached different conclusion on negative interest rates. So Reserve Bank of New Zealand is very keen, it seems, on moving towards negative interest rates, and we expect them to do so next year. The Reserve Bank of Australia is saying it's not going to happen here, or very, very unlikely. So the one of the benefits of negative interest rates is theoretically a weaker currency. You move interest rates negative, lowers your currency. For a big trading nation like Australia, that's good news. But the cost side is really centered around the transmission mechanism of monetary policy. How does low interest rates lead to more credit being created? The banking system lending more money out into the economy. And in the Australian context, the banking system plays a very significant role in the transmission mechanism from interest rates to the supply credit to the economy. Negative interest rates are bad for the banking system in terms of they compress net interest margins. We've seen this in countries like Japan and Europe where they do have negative interest rates. So they are damaging to the banking system. And that actually could lead to less credit being supplied rather than more. The other cost, which is a little bit counterintuitive, and the Reserve Bank governor has talked about this, is that there's some evidence, particularly in Europe, that negative interest rates lead people to save more, not spend more. So usually as interest rates go lower and lower, people will spend more money because the cost of debt is lower. But once you go into negative interest rates, people who are saving and depositing say, well, if I'm going to, let's say I put $100 into the bank and in 5 years' time I only get $95 back because my return's negative, they'll actually save more to counter that reduced future value of their savings. So you actually get to a point where negative interest rates actually increase savings, reduce spending.
I was saying that's Sorry, already yep. a situation we're seeing at the moment globally. Saving rates have gone up, so it's hard to see how that would really start to help promote spending in the economy.
Yeah, exactly.
We're kind of say unconventional is off the agenda. What else could the RBA do in terms of their conventional, unconventional monetary policy? Could they do more things around their asset purchase program? Could they tinker with that if they needed to provide more support into the Australian economy?
Yeah, so if you think of the conventional, unconventional is very low interest rates, but above zero, forward guidance that interest rates are going to stay low for a long time, and what we call quantitative easing or going into the secondary bond market and buying bonds. So the cash rate target here is 0.25%. Theoretically, they could lower the target to, let's say, 0.1%. But the actual cash rate trading in markets at the moment is about 13 basis points, 0.13%. So lowering the target probably wouldn't do much. They could change the forward guidance. And at the moment, they're saying interest rates are going to be at 0.25% for about 3 years. They could change that to, say, 5 years. And or they could buy bonds further along the yield curve. So at the moment, they're saying they'll buy government bonds to keep the 3-year government yield at 0.25%, i.e. the cash rate. They could say, let's move that out to 5 years. So we'll buy government bonds to keep the 5-year yield at 0.25%. Or they could go even further out if they saw the need. So our view is that if the Reserve Bank thought they had to do more on monetary policy, the most likely outcome would be that they would substantially increase their government bond purchase program, both Commonwealth and state government bonds, and lower yields further along the yield curve.
It is certainly an interesting topic, isn't it, when we're already at such a low cash rate, trying to find ways to stimulate the economy through monetary policy looks increasingly challenging unless you go down that unconventional path, which is been ruled out at the moment. And then it really does come down to fiscal policy. And that's certainly something the Reserve Bank of Australia, Governor Philip Lowe, has talked about quite a lot, is the need for fiscal policy to do more of the heavy lifting, both at the federal and the state level. And we certainly hope to hear more from that in terms of the October budget, which is getting closer by the day.
Yes, that's right. I think the Reserve Bank Governor's been very clear, and we agree that fiscal policy really has to do the heavy lifting now, and clearly the Commonwealth government is doing that in a very large way, and the governor has made it very clear he expects the state government to step up. And what the Reserve Bank is, if you like, guaranteed they'll do is keep the borrowing costs for governments very low for a long time to come. So the interest cost of all that higher government debt is going to be extremely low. and the economic return, we think, will be well above that interest cost. So more fiscal policy spending is really the focus.
And the upcoming budget is on the 6th of October. So, Stephen, appreciate your insights as always.
My pleasure. Thanks, Belinda.
Now, you can find Stephen Halmerich's Vantage Point report called The Second Wave, Economic and Policy Implications, where he does talk a lot about modern monetary theory, on combankresearch.com.au. And that report was published on the 25th of August, 2020.